We're talking about race and justice in this hour. John Safran is an Australian filmmaker and prankster who once traveled from Melbourne to Mississippi in search of a white nationalist. He was looking for the self-proclaimed founder of the American Skinhead Movement, a guy named Richard Barrett. Now, not only did Safran interview the man, he also managed to sneak a DNA sample off of him, had it analyzed, and then announced the results publicly at Barrett's Whites Only Spirit of America Day banquet.
At this time, we'd like to thank the Australian Television, which is here covering the banquet and the Spirit of America Day. And John, if you'll come up.
He wanted to say a few words of appreciation. John, we're honored to have you.
Well, thank you to the people of Mississippi, and congratulations to all the participants in the Spirit of America Awards. Now, this is a bit awkward, but yesterday when I interviewed you, Richard, I procured a saliva sample and I took it to a DNA testing plant, and the results are in, as they say, and there's no real easy way to put this, but you have African DNA. You're part African. But don't worry, it's not like you're black, it's more you're white and a bit black, like Barack Obama. But it doesn't really matter, because like we're all mixed up, all of us. Like, if we went back far enough, I probably wouldn't even be Jewish. Anyway, thank you everybody, and enjoy the Spirit of America banquet.
So from here, the story gets even more complicated. A year later, Richard Barrett was murdered. A young black man named Vincent McGee was accused, and John Safran couldn't resist going back to Mississippi to investigate. The result is a book called God'll Cut You Down, The Tangled Tale of a White Supremacist, a Black Hustler, a Murder, and How I Lost a Year in Mississippi. Doug Gordon talked with John Safran.
John, why did you want to travel to Mississippi to investigate the murder of Richard Barrett?
Because I'd spent 2 days with the guy who ends up getting murdered. That's a pretty rare thing. And, you know, there's all these archetypes that seem like there will be substance to them. White supremacist, young black man. And then one of the first stories that came through is that the young black guy called Vincent McGee, he was about 22. His initial story to the investigators was that Richard Barrett, the white supremacist, had sexually attacked him and he had to fight him off. And one thing led to another, and that's why he ended up murdering Richard Barrett.
Yeah. You mentioned that Vincent McGee said that Richard Barrett had sexually attacked him. Was that the only theory, or were there other theories about McGee's motivation for murdering Barrett?
Well, it could have been over money, because Vincent McGee did yard work for Richard Barrett, and Richard Barrett, as I found out, was infamous for scamming people. For instance, I tracked down white workers who'd worked for him who were like just like furious because they'd fixed his house or whatever, and they were still chasing money off him years later. So it could have been just a fight over money where Vincent just felt exploited having worked for Richard and not getting paid.
Or not getting paid enough, right?
Yes. People just thought also, hey, young black guy, white supremacist, how can this not be about race? Maybe Richard Barrett was racist to him or something, and that caused Vincent to strike him. But there were so many curious, weird things about this case that just didn't fit into easy archetypes. One of them was that Vincent McGee apparently didn't know that Richard Barrett, who he was working for, was an infamous white supremacist. Huh. And which sort of made sense, because Richard was from a bygone era. He was this guy who'd always be the go-to guy if you wanted the crazy white supremacist to be in your article or on your TV show or whatever. They never quite trusted him. Why is this New Yorker here trying to set up a Mississippian white supremacist group? So he was sort of never quite accepted even within the white supremacist scene in Mississippi. They all sort of suspected he was gay, but they didn't quite speak about it. One of the real interesting things I discovered there was amongst the white community in general, like the conservative white community, but even amongst some of the white nationalist community, it was if you're gay but didn't speak about it and everyone knew you were, but you just like kind of kept it to yourself and didn't flaunt it, you could live life and those people wouldn't bring it up. I kind of discovered that in the black community that Vincent was part of, it was more taboo to be gay there than it was in the white nationalist community there. One of the stories that came out is perhaps Vincent McGee, the young black man, was getting paid for sex with Richard Barrett, the white supremacist. So, you know, Vincent was totally complicit in the whole thing. And when I spoke to his mother, she was really concerned and she really wanted to make it clear, like nothing else, that Vincent isn't gay.
What happened at Vincent McGee's trial?
He pled guilty, so there was no trial. And he accepted 65 years jail. So that was like really weird.
Yeah, why do you think he did that?
Yeah, it's like, why wouldn't you just roll the dice? Anything could happen. And there was a local lawyer there, this white guy who was kind of helping me along when I was there. And he said, you know, in this county, people might be sympathetic to a person having to fight off a gay attack. It's not a sure thing that even a white conservative jury would definitely go against Vincent McGee, even though he was black or whatever. One explanation for why he accepted 65 years jail rather than roll the dice, because by that point, the death penalty had been taken off the table. And one theory is that Vincent didn't want it dragged into the spotlight in a court case that he'd been paid for sex from anyone, and but particularly a prominent white supremacist in Mississippi.
Actually, we're able to have several phone interviews with Vincent McGee while he's in jail. Can you tell me about those?
I sent a letter pretty early on and he wasn't getting back to me, and he did after several months. Out of the blue, I got a phone call from him. It took me a while to even understand him because he spoke with such a slur. Also, he was ringing from a cell phone in prison and he'd be cut out all the time. I'd just get random calls from him, usually when he needed something from me. In fact, always when he needed something from me, mainly Walmart Green Dot cards, which are like these gift cards that you read out the numbers on the back to them that served as a currency in prison.
How much did you spend?
I reckon a couple of thousand.
Wow.
Just the right amount for both sides to be annoyed at me. If you think it's wrong to pay a killer, then I'm a jerk. And then if you think he's in a really bad situation and I'm writing a book, then I'm a jerk. There's sort of like no way around it, really.
So how do you view yourself? You mentioned some people may think you were a jerk for doing that. How do you view the ethics of doing that?
First of all, I announce it in the book. That would be almost like the only thing that I'd have a problem with. I mean, my guess was he was like spending the money on things like cigarettes. And so I didn't really have a problem with the fact that someone who's stuck in this awful situation in the prison system, regardless of what he did, I didn't like really have a problem that my money's going towards him having these little luxuries like cigarettes or whatever.
Vincent actually threatened you at one point, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like the first couple of times I paid him and he didn't really cough up enough information, I felt, for my story. I was like, oh, whatever. But after a while, I was just like, oh, screw this. I said, listen, don't tell your story. That's fine. But you can't expect me to pay you and then not tell your story. But if you don't want to talk, that's fine or whatever. It was a point where I was just like, I was not going to pay him. And he just got furious straight away and just threatened to have me killed that night. And I was like, how does this impact on what I now think about him and Richard Barrett? Because Richard Barrett was probably killed. He was like in a house and probably held back on money from Vincent McGee and then ended up with a knife in his throat. So it's like Vincent was really playing out with me, you know, in some ways, things that had happened on the night.
Do you think he was serious when he threatened?
Oh, yeah, I think he was serious but impotent. I was sort of scared a little, like I checked the locks, I remember it well. But by that point, I knew he was a bit of a fantasist or a fabulist or whatever, and I kind of thought he didn't really have the pull to, like, drag together a posse to have me killed. I sort of felt I was the one guy in Mississippi that was even, like, talking to him. So I wasn't, like, incredibly threatened. And in that way, he was a mirror of Richard Barrett, because Richard Barrett also, like, big noted himself as his white nationalist leader. And when you dug a little deeper, it's like, really, was he? Like, how many people actually followed him? And Vincent was like that too, where he big noted himself as this gang leader. And in both cases, I thought there was a bit of emperor having no clothes.
Yeah. Did you want Vincent to be a hero?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I first went there, I wanted it to be really simple. I wanted it to be me and Vincent McGee and his black lawyer and his family, like, it's us, we're this little team, and we're going against the racist state and the racist prison system. that's true. It's not like that's not in the story of Mississippi and in the story of this case, but it's just so much messier than that. Vincent's no angel. Even though it was about race in a manner, it was about other things as well. And so, yeah, he definitely wasn't the sort of like Nelson Mandela character I kind of wanted him to be when I arrived there.
John Safran is the author of God'll Cut You Down, The Tangled Tale of a White Supremacist, a Black Hustler, a Murder, and How I Lost a Year in Mississippi. He talked with Doug Gordon.